The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of Valerie, her guests, and callers. Now here's your host, Valerie Kirkgaard.
I am your host. I am here, and I'm on the air with Armin Walker. Armin, what were we just talking about? We were talking about good banking, right?
Banking, that's right.
Now, if you tell our listening audience a little bit about what a good banker is, because I know most people don't even have a concept of that idea, tell me what you believe in and what you stand for.
Well, I wanted, in the context of banking, I had spent my career lending money, and I think a good banker starts with understanding his customer.
Well, you know, a lot of people think that bankers are like sneaky people and stuff like that. How many years have you actually been in banking?
This represents my 30th year.
30th years. Now, did you ever notice any sneaky issues yourself during the 30 years? Okay, you're on the air and it's being recorded. It's fine.
I will say that when I went into banking, I viewed my entrance into banking as, in part because it was viewed as an honorable profession.
And how long did it take you to find out that it wasn't quite always honorable?
I found out that certainly aspects of banking, and like anything, when you have a lot of power, people have the ability to manipulate things and to make decisions that certainly aren't in a lot of people's best interest.
And so was that kind of like a shock for you to find that out when you were you'd moved into honor? You know, to do something that was honorable, and you find out that all there's corruption is there. How did you handle that?
Well, I would say that most banks and bankers probably do go into it with honorable intentions and are probably good people, but there is no doubt that the greed that may be prevalent in our society and the desire to make money often becomes more important than people's desires to do the right thing and to do good.
You know, back in 1871, Armin, that's when we created the United States of America. Did you know that?
I did.
You did? Okay, so the United States of America is actually only the District of Columbia. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, the United States of America actually is a corporation, and it only applies to the District of Columbia, which is, what, 65 square miles or something? And so somehow through a marvelous combination of smoke and mirrors, we have been led to think that the United States of America is the whole United States of America. Now, when you look at your checkbook, Armin, is your name in caps and lower cases, or is it in all caps? You got it? I mean, is it there? Can you look at it?
I'm trying to look at it, check. It's been a... I don't move money around by checking.
Right. Go ahead, Baker. Go find the checkbook.
It is in all caps.
Okay, it's in all caps. You know why?
I don't.
That's because that's your corporate identity. Now, prior to 1871, you were a sovereign. Do you know what that is? You know, like a man who owns his own man's home, his castle, all that stuff?
Right.
That's
right.
Sovereignty.
Right.
You know, there weren't traffic fines and all this other stuff. If you killed somebody, you went to jail. You know, if you stole something, you went to jail or whatever you did, but you didn't go to jail over this other stuff, right? No, they created a corporate entity so that you could be taxed and punished. Corporate entity is your name in all caps, and that's called the straw man, okay? Your name in caps and lower case is actually Armin Walker the Sovereign or Armin Walker, you know, like the Sovereign. That's who you are when you do that. So they actually had to create, because you were a Sovereign, they actually had to create an entity to tax and punish. And that's the all caps. Did you know that?
I wasn't aware of that.
There's even more going on. It's just wonderful. So I know I told you before the show started that the United States Post Office actually has its origins in another country. Do you remember where that was? It's okay. Because I just love it that you don't, that I get to say it, right? It's in Bern, Switzerland.
Yeah.
So the United States Post Office is a branch of the Bern, Switzerland United Postal Offices, which actually do post offices all over the world, and they're owned by the 12 families. Did you know the mints are owned by the 12 families, too?
Didn't realize that.
How about the U.S. Treasury?
Owned by?
The 12 families.
Well, that's intriguing.
So, you know, all, as we were chatting before the show began, back in 1933, there was something called House Joint Resolution number 192. Do you know what that was?
Not familiar.
Okay, that's when they took all the gold from us. Remember that? I don't remember what year they took the silver. Took the silver, I think, between 1965 and 1975, but they took all the gold from us in 1933. Normally that's called either treason or theft, and they were reminded of that by the judicial system, so they put in this little thing that they call a remedy for that, okay, which meant that everybody had value attached to their Social Security number. Now, that value, people don't know that they have that value. So if you go out and you buy another house, Armin, and you sign your name, the first time you sign the name on the mortgage papers, you actually are paying for your own house through your own treasury account, which is associated with your Social Security number. The rest of the signatures are actually making you a tenant on your own property, which gives them the right to tax you, also gives them the right to foreclose on you. So they never actually lent you any money. The bank actually took money from your account and as a pass-through account and gave it to you and then charged you interest on it and foreclosed and did all of those different things and then multiplied it. You know, right now, currently, because everybody's being cautious, all the banks are being cautious, they're only multiplying the amount of your loan by 9 times. When the bubble was really big, they were multiplying it by 40 times and selling Xerox copies of your original note to, oh, China, for instance, is really upset with us.
Slicing and dicing.
Did you hear about the big lien that the Chinese government put on our government?
A lien. They've already got the treasuries, which is an obligation to pay.
Right, but this lien is huge. It's like in the trillions, I think. The Chinese are upset with us because they thought they were buying original notes and they got all these derivatives that are worth nothing. So, you know, it's just a very interesting financial picture here. And what's always attracted me to you, Armin, is your love for human beings and your desire to have things work well for people. And I think you're an anomaly. Is that the right word?
Anomaly. I
think you're the most honorable, precious banker I ever met in my whole life.
I appreciate that.
I do. I thank Candace for introducing us. It was like, basically, I don't go around and shoot guns, even though I know how to do that. Okay?
Right.
So I met somebody, and I don't kill animals. I don't shoot animals, but I actually met a Republican, and I would tend to be Democrat if I was something, but I actually met a Republican who worked on drugs and shot animals as part of what he liked to do in life, and I could respect his position, you know? Mm-hmm. So when I first met you, I felt like I was meeting somebody who was the antithesis of everything that I stood for. And then I realized what an incredible gift you are in your ability to listen to people and the genuineness of your heart. I think you have more heart than any man I've ever known. So I just want to acknowledge you for that here on the air and say, hey, what we're doing here, and you have a desire to educate people financially, and I have a desire to have you know just a little bit more about what's under the covers here in the United States. So
thing. And that's a good thing. And that's, I appreciate what you said. I've spent, as we discussed, a lot of years in banking, and my feeling as a banker is you shouldn't enter into a transaction unless all parties benefit. And it's amazing to me how many decisions are made by the banking industry where there was only one party who benefited. And the customer, whose obligation it is for the bank to know, wasn't even asked. And so I'm specifically, whether it's credit cards, consumer credit, lines of credit that people take away right when people need them. You know, banks were, they really should be doing honorable things because, as well, I might define some aspects of banking differently than you, banks are a reflection of our society. It's our assets and our liabilities. And that's the part of our society that's hurting right now. And it's because we had a lot of transactions that did not make sense. And we did them for a long time. And the banking industry, I'm a banker, has to accept responsibility. And I'm not sure that the way that the banks have been treated, TARP, FASB regulations, I'm not sure that that was the proper reward.
I know it wasn't.
Behavior. and I don't think it has set the tone for the type of discipline and responsibility that the banking industry should have.
Let me just say, in response to what you just said, it's been stated by more than me that if that money had been used to pay off mortgages in America, all American mortgages would have been paid off, especially since the money belonged to the people originally in the first place, and that certainly would have ended the recession.
It would. Well, I do believe something had to happen, and the Treasury did have to step in. The banking system was completely locked up.
What about just telling people?
I do agree that right now what has happened is that the industry that caused the problems was left in a position to be in control of how they treated the customers that had gotten hurt. And I don't think most Americans would step up today and say, hey, in the past year since the industry's got TARP, that I feel better about how I'm being treated by the banks.
Oh, no, worse, actually. Do you know anything about American Express?
I'm somewhat familiar.
Most of those little people are really something else. First of all, they're the nastiest batch of collectors I ever ran into, bar none. But second of all, American Express has been going around scanning people's zip codes, okay? And even if people had perfect payment histories, they could be over in Europe somewhere getting ready to use their American Express card and it would have been canceled because they were in the wrong zip code.
Yeah.
And it's like things like that are just...
Well, the banking
you get no brownie points from me on that.
Banking industry is reporting $42 billion in fee income off of customer deposits this year, which means
$43 billion?
Billion. So think of the wealth transfer from all the people whose accounts had no money, i.e. they were low on funds. $43 billion was taken from them and went to the banking industry. And the bank said a couple months ago publicly that we'll reduce these fees, and they effectively have not. They've continued to, and that's the type of thing that the bank, and these are the same institutions, many of the largest ones in particular, that are reaping the benefits of these fees. And as a customer, you have no opinion over how that's treated.
This is really interesting.
Influence it whatsoever. Now, the banking industry needs the challenge, and the problem is that people don't have the power as individuals to say or do anything. And then government, with all due respect, how do you regulate an industry that is really complex?
Question about regulation, because that this just struck. What is the Glass? Is it the Glass-Steagall Act? Was that right? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Glass-Steagall.
Yeah, tell our listeners what Glass-Steagall was about.
Well, it was a regulation that came about after the Great Depression that effectively separated commercial banking, the banks that lend money and take in deposits, from investment banking, the banks that deal more with the equity markets. and it separated those activities. But what has happened over the years is Glass-Steagall has just been pierced and all but taken away. And so the investment banks get into the commercial banking business and vice versa. And usually it's competitive pressures that cause these regulations to break down. When you say Lehman, you could say credit competitive pressures, maybe greed. But having said that, when you have Lehman Brothers, one of the largest mortgage lenders in the country, that means they was completely broken down. And to me, the issue isn't regulation, it's appropriate regulations. You can't just keep piling on regulations and think they're effective.
Well, the important thing about the Glass-Steagall Act was the fact that it actually limited the number of times that a bank could leverage a loan.
Right.
And then in 1999... you know, we have all these wonderful thoughts about how Bill Clinton left us with a surplus, but he also opened the gates for the credit card companies to go up into the 30 and 40% range on interest. Right now, I just got a thing from Citibank telling me that if I didn't like what they were doing, they would cancel my card. Okay, and what they're doing is they're raising their interest rate to 29.99%.
I know the situation that...
That's disgusting.
The rate Citibank is charging a customer is 59% today.
59%
today. And the question I have for the banks is, how, if the core in regulation is to know your customer, did you talk to the customer and did you figure out whether, one, they could afford that change? Do they agree with it?
No.
And now the consumer credit industry, I mean, that's, to me, that's not honorable. In the industry, it doesn't feel right. It's not honorable to charge somebody 59%, especially if they can't afford it. If it's a small balance...
What do you mean it's loan sharks, for God's sakes? That's exactly. Shark rate.
Yeah, well, and banks are exempt from usury.
How did that happen?
That's the law. That's the rule. And you kind of need for banks to be, I would argue, exempt from usury, but not if you're going running amok.
I got one for you. Now, do you know, I bet you don't know this one, and it would be kind of fun if you do, but I don't think you know this one. Our Congress is about 75% attorneys. Did you know that?
I'm not surprised.
Okay, so what comes after an attorney's name?
What, the
besides Doctor of Jurisprudence.
The ESQ.
Uh-huh, and what is ESQ? What does that mean?
Esquire.
Right. Esquire is not a United States term. It's an English term.
Mm-hmm.
All attorneys are foreign agents. They actually are of the English bar, and that's why they get Esquire after their names.
Hope it helps them.
Pardon?
I hope it helps.
Well, the point is that we have 75% of our Congress making decisions that are actually foreign agents. And I don't think they know that when they, you know.
They don't think of themselves as.
Well, I called up one of my attorney friends, okay, and I asked him if he would be willing to be a double agent, and he started speaking in an English accent, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He knew. I don't think they all do. I don't know at what point. I mean, I remember my girlfriend Paula going through law school, and I never heard her come back with any stories about this, but I'll tell you, my friend Larry sure knew what I was talking about.
I know a lot of attorneys, I'll ask.
Well, the point that we're talking about, the Esquire, we do not give titles in this country, okay?
Right.
That is not an American title. That is a foreign title. So for them to accept a foreign title, they actually have to be accepting a foreign title, which is illegal for American citizens. So just get how deep this whole thing is. I mean, Armin, it's so much fun to talk to you because... when you and I first started out talking, I had a sense of all this stuff going on, but I hadn't put 8 months of research and study into it. And a lot of blabbing on the subject. And I got really upset when I found... I read this thing in the paper, Armin, where this man had killed himself and his entire family because they were being foreclosed on.
Yeah.
And to find out that man and his family were wealthy and didn't know it, and that the money that had been given to them and they were being foreclosed on them from actually came from their own Social Security account, that's accepted for value. It's as simple, Armin, was writing accepted for value exempt from levy and some other stuff on bills and sending it in, and it accesses your own private account and pays off your bills. It actually zero balances, but it doesn't pay it off. You know, what are banks are interested in? Their books balancing, right?
Very much so.
Yeah, that's what they're doing. So they make the books balance. And if you talk to them in the right way, guess what? The books balance. I know now a whole slew of people that have written the right words on their mortgages, and their mortgages are now zero balanced.
Mm.
I don't know if I told you this or not, but one of the guys that's doing this with me, he actually works for Bank of America. I love this man. He's been a kindness in my life for absolutely years, and he works for Bank of America, and he spent years as a mortgage broker, and I'll be writing off his home this week, okay? I'll be writing in so that his home can be zero balanced. So he's familiar with all of this stuff, and Bank of America was who had all my credit cards, okay? Because I was wheeling and dealing in real estate, and I was, you know, a millionaire in 2007. In 2008, things began to change. And one of them was that I owed Bank of America $400,000 on my different credit cards, and I used to make $100,000 a month, so it was no big deal until I made $2,000 a month instead. So Bank of America, bless their hearts, I borrowed some money to pay my debts, and I put it in my checking account. Do you know what they did? They offset my checking account and stole all the money. Based on that, somewhere in the small pipe, it says that if somebody is behind on their bills, that they can offset your checking account. So I went from having $5,000 in my checking account that I was going to pay bills with to having minus $2,500 in one day. And I was actually sitting over at one of the branches of Bank of America watching the money disappear from my account with the branch manager, who wishes to be called only Emerald. That's his code name, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're sitting there watching this money disappear. And I'm like, God, they cleaned out the loan that I got. It's like all gone. And when I talked about it, I found out that I had somewhere in the paperwork agreed to something called offsetting.
Right of offset, yes.
Right, but what you don't may or may not know, so I immediately went and questioned all the bank managers I knew. And what I found out was that it's illegal to offset someone into overdraft. Did you know that?
You know, that's interesting that you would say that, because that often happens by the banks. If it's illegal for a consumer to write an overdraft, the banks often will approve things and do overdraft fees that effectively cause an overdraft.
Yes, and that was part of what, well, I mean, it was
that's part
anything.
Of that $42 billion I mentioned.
Yeah, right, that was part of it, okay. So I'm sitting there, and I have just watched all my capacity to pay bills. I borrowed enough money to pay my bills, and it was all gone. So I sat there, and I looked at it at $2,500 overdrawn, and I talked to bank presidents, and they were all calling and trying to get money from me to cover the overdraft and stuff. And I said, nope. So you guys did it. I found out that what you did is illegal. Deal with it. You know what they did? About 4 months later, they showed a $2,500 deposit to my checking account, which I didn't make. And my account is zero balanced, and I have the right to reopen an account at Bank of America.
Path of least resistance, maybe.
Isn't that amazing? They had to balance the book, so they did. And what they had done was illegal. So as long as my account was sitting around in red, which it was, you know, I did online banking, I would actually at this point chuckle about it after I got over so mad at them for causing me. They caused all my checks to bounce. Because I have written checks to the people to pay the bills that I put the money in there for. And they didn't warn me or anything, they just did it. Now, that's Bank of America. But at the same time, I will tell you, since I've been through that process, they were by far the most reasonable in settlements. Like Bank of America, I actually settled a bunch of my accounts before I found out that I had access to this way of taking care of bills, Armin. I actually settled a number of my accounts with them for 10 cents on the dollar. And I wondered at the time how they could afford to do it. I didn't realize I was settling on my own money.
I'm not, we'll end up having another conversation.
I understand you some stuff, and we're going to talk and stuff, because you and I are going to be powerful allies for the good of all.
Because I just think most important, the banks, and at the end of the day, there's often no more than a dozen to two dozen people that at the top of every bank that are making core decisions that influence how the soldiers have to carry out orders. And I find it amazing in the day and age where people needed help. The bank, and I'm generalizing because there's some good community bankers and banks out there and others that are really doing good things, but banks in aggregate made a series of decisions that reached into consumers' pockets and put it into theirs. And none of that had to do with TARP. When you start charging people higher rates, when you start shrinking their credit card balances and their real estate equity lines at a time when they needed it most, when you start putting longer holds on deposits into accounts so they can't have access to their funds, when you charge it over, the net effect of that was literally,
You said $46 billion, didn't you?
$42 billion just
42.
Fees. But when you start adding these other items, you're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars of impact. And while Wall Street, 5% of Americans own equity in Wall Street, so Wall Street's been going up this year. That 5%, and I'm not saying that 5%, which includes me, isn't happy to get that gain. Main Street isn't being heard, and I get the impression with the Obama administration, healthcare is a way of saying, I'm hearing Main Street. You know, I'm 40 plus million people uninsured. I'm hearing you. And yes, it does get to be expensive, but maybe if you start charging 40 plus million people for insurance, maybe there's some money to pay for things. But at the same time,
there's plenty of money to pay for everything. Truth be known, if bankers like yourself came and got the facts and started to step into honest positions, and that's why I want to introduce you to Tim Turner, because he's creating his bank. I think that somebody like you could be extremely valuable to Mr. Turner, and you're going to be just really impressed with what this guy has done. You know, he started out as a fisherman, and he's turned into one of the leaders of the maritime law movement. And for those listeners, we're actually going to be taking a break in a moment. We're on the air with Armin Walker, banker, bless his heart, just one of the dearest people I've ever met in this lifetime, and Val Kirkgaard here on Waking Up in America, and we're discussing Accepted for Value, maritime law, banking, the whole gishmaz here. But right now, we're actually going to take a break, and we're going to hear what Joy has put together for us. I think you're really going to like Diamond Alignment. Some of you will even discover that we'll sound a little calmer after this is over because I get riled. So join us after this, and we'll tell you more of the secrets about what's going on in the United States of America and banking.
We live in a world that is more alive with possibility than ever before in history. Yet it is easy to get lost in the confusion and chaos of such an accelerated world. How do we stay connected and aligned with the unlimited potential that lies within us and soar in these exciting yet challenging times? Diamond Alignment, a sacred technology for the 21st century, offers high-speed connection and alignment with this divine power within, both convenient and profound. The 6-minute multi-sensory diamond experience delivered via the internet clears your mind, relaxes your body, and creates inner peace no matter what is going on around you. The Diamond Alignment experience effortlessly keeps you charged with joy and equanimity and greater focus and clarity throughout your day.
If you want to actually visit our website at wakingupinamerica.com. Oh, there's the rest of it.
You activate the unlimited wealth and potential within you.
There you go, Diamond Alignment. Hey, really valuable stuff for calming the spirit and the soul. I think Diamond Alignment talks to the soul. And if you visit our website at wakingupinamerica.com and you scan towards the bottom of the page, you're actually going to see Diamond Alignment there. You're also going to see our other advertisers, bless their hearts. And without them, Waking Up in America would not be possible. So when you go to the bottom of the page, you'll see Diamond Alignment. Well, you'll pass Barack Obama and Bo the Portuguese water dog taking their first walk with Barack Obama on water and the water dog swimming next to him. You'll find out about the Golden Hearts Foundation. Further down, you'll find out about the Race for the Rainforest and Marine Wetlands and American Prairies. Click there and sign up. You can save 7 square feet a day. You do that for a year, and you're saving a lot of rainforest. The rainforest in particular, well, in particular, I mean, the seas are pretty important, too. But the rainforest is actually called the lungs of the world because that's where most of our oxygen comes from. And with all the ravaging that's been going down there, the oxygen content of the planet has actually been decreasing. So I like oxygen, and I like water, and I like things like that. So if you get behind those and you back those and click on them every day, it will make a huge difference to you. If you've had enough of these conversations and you wish to run away to Mexico, don't worry. The people down there aren't sick. They're sitting on the beach with margaritas waiting for you. The sunsets are absolutely gorgeous, and most of the stuff you've heard about Mexico, unless it was good recently, is just baloney. My opinion, I think that they were trying to sell flu vaccines. But that's another whole topic of its own. You'll also see Stardust, and you're going to like these guys. They have a mailing list of about 100,000 people. People of really high intention and high integrity and high quality, and you can send ads out at a very reasonable price. So click on the Stardust ad, and when you talk to Raw, tell him that Val sent you, and guess what? He'll give you a deal. I know that. He's a good guy. Whole person calendar, especially for the California area here, comes out of Santa Barbara. This is a listing of all the really special places that are available for your transformation and your intrigue. Take a look at the bottom part of the page, and you're going to see Dennis Weaver. Oh, it makes me all mushy every time I look at him. I love that guy. He spent many years on the radio with me, actually since 1987 until he actually fell over when he was sitting in bed and clunked out, and that was the end of Dennis's life a couple years ago. But Ecolonomics lives on, and I really, really, really invite you to check out Ecolonomics.org, and the people there are they're going to make sure that Ecolonomics, which is the blending of ecology and business, goes on. If you click on Imagine, you'll actually go straight to the Koning Company, where you can find out about how to get your sinuses cleared up and neck and shoulder tension will disappear. That's KoningCompany.com. Want a little emotional clearing? Click on Directed Breath and find out how that works. I've actually invented the fastest emotional clearing. I don't know of anybody that does it precisely and more faster. I knew great healers that actually emotionally clear people, but I don't know anything as precise as what it is that I'm doing. And when Willie Nelson was on our show, he gave us permission to listen to his song, Whatever Happened to Peace. So you can click on that and you get that for free. We also have archives. So check out the archives. Make sure you drop in and check out Running the Numbers, an American Self-Portrait. They've turned our refuge into art, and it's really pretty fantastic. So when you click on the archives, you can go in and you can find all of our shows back for about 5 years. So to the guys at Voice America, thank you. And to Armin Walker, back on the air with Armin Walker, banker with a heart. And I can testify to that. I've seen him in person, and I know his heart. So when you listen, this guy is like, he's there for you. And he is a banker with integrity. And the more he finds out about what I'm talking about, the more it's going to get interesting. Because I know, Armin, that you've been listening to me with a kind heart. But after you discover more of this, you are going to have so much fun because you are way richer than you think you are, too. And believe me, it's always a good thing.
That's always a good thing.
Hey, when they talk, I call it airy fairy, even though I have a tendency to. I'm pretty high spiritually. I believe in angels. I accept miracles. I do all kinds of stuff, but I also have my feet in this world as well. So I'm functioning between two levels all the time, right? And the skeptical side of me goes, oh, God, could all this really be true? Because I think when they talk about your divine inheritance, this is what they're talking about. This money is available. It's not money, really, in the same way that people think of money, Armin. It's more like debits and credits. okay? So we've got a lot of credit. Every American has a lot of credit. Now, you know that I'm a private maritime banker and I can write bonded promissory notes in large numbers, okay? But what I'm talking about today, this accepted for value, this is for everybody that's got a Social Security number. Even your children have them now, don't they?
That's right, yeah.
Now, when I was born, we didn't do that, okay? But the Social Security number going to children is now part of this identification thing that I've been talking about. That's their wealth. And if you have a Social Security card that predates 1999, you should go get a new one. Do you have that?
Yeah, a little bit before 1999.
Okay, so get a new card.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to apply for a new card because that has a different set of... there's different numbers on it. The ones since 1999 that actually make it easier for you to access these accounts I'm talking about.
Change your Social Security number?
No, you don't change your number.
Okay.
You just get a new card because the information
right.
that you want is not on your old card.
Okay.
Okay? So through the years, things have been happening in the background, you know? And by the way, here's something else I bet people don't know. Everybody gets 10 Social Security cards, no more in a lifetime. Interesting, huh?
Interesting. I don't know why.
Well, it has to do with the fact that the Social Security cards are limited to the wealth, are attached to the wealth, and you can actually use up a Social Security card, so you have to go get a new one. You can actually use up the value attached to your mm-hmm. Social Security card. Do you love it?
Intriguing.
Are you feeling a little richer as we talk, or just more skeptical?
Well,
a little bit of both.
Maybe a little both. It's not, I mean, there's no doubt that there are assets that the government gets a hold of that banks end up giving back to the government, that sort of disappear into ether, if you will. And I think the Ashkeet assets, you know, so there are assets that, get lost, at least from my perspective, get lost in the ether. And it's like, what happens when there's a checking account that has a balance that nobody claims?
Well, it's really interesting you bring that up because, you know, when we go to these seminars, we go out and we talk, okay, afterwards or in the breaks and stuff like that. Remember these funds I told you about that we're all attached to?
Mm-hmm.
What happens when you die, I said. And they said, the funds are then turned back to the government. The government gets the access to those funds. And I said, really, that doesn't seem right. And he said, oh, well, it's not a problem because you can actually go back and claim the funds of all of your grandparents and everything back to 1933 when the whole thing was set up. So you just put your finger on something without even realizing that you were putting your finger on something. Now, I don't know who teaches that class, okay? So I don't know anything about that.
Yeah.
But I won't find out about it. Right now, I'm just getting bills handled. I mean, I sent in, Armin, the absolute pleasure is I sent in over $2 million worth of bills to the Treasury this week, to the IRS. And I 100% expect to have those bills all zero balanced. Do you know how powerful that is? What a feeling that is. Even if it wasn't true, okay? Mind you, I totally 100% believe it isn't true, but I always have this, like, devil's advocate. If it wasn't true, I feel so good about it that even if it takes me 2 months to find out, I'll be a happier, nicer person for the next 2 months to find out that it was all wrong, and I totally believe it's correct. But it's affected my heart, my personality, and my good humor to such a degree that people just wish... that, you know, like, shh, calm down, we got it.
Well, you'll hope that it's not a financial placebo.
Yeah, but it isn't because I've already talked to a bunch of people that have done it.
Yeah.
They've already got their account zero balance. You imagine what they feel like?
And that smile stayed on the face of the
You know, and I'll tell you something. There's two ways of going after people, right? The judge that I went up before in the court in downtown Los Angeles because I sued Indy Mac Bank, that's how I stayed in my house. Because I knew something was wrong, you know? I knew something was off. And I knew that I was supposed to be getting what they call a wet ink contract, right? Can you tell our listeners what a wet ink contract means?
A wet ink contract?
Well, it's the real thing. It's got real signatures on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, they can't foreclose on you unless you have, unless they have the original contract.
Right, that's right.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So this judge, I requested to see the original contract, and the judge decided against me and wrote it off, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as a secure party creditor, I can actually file papers against that judge for ignoring federal law. I can file them against the United States Courthouse, the one in Los Angeles, and I can file them against all the clerks in the court, and if they don't answer my papers exactly the way they're supposed to within 21 days, I can then place a lien on the whole system. I can do that.
That's interesting.
But you know what? I'd rather not. Even though it would make me a billionaire, like probably within 2 years I'd be a billionaire, because I am right. It's really clear when you have a statute and a judge ignores the statute. It'd be really such a fight. So I thought I would just get on the radio instead and tell everybody how to access their accounts and teach them how to do it, you know?
Yeah.
So if you want to find out how to access your accounts, call me at 310-455-8623, and I'll help you out. And I do charge a fee for that. I charge processing fees for my time. I do not charge for the process, by the way. So that's what I'm willing to do, at least for another couple of weeks. And I'm really surprised, Armin, at how many people, it's just too contrary to what they believe. You know, they don't believe a government would ever do anything like this. They can't believe it's gone on as long as it has. Do you know how do you know about the Rothschilds? You know Nathan Rothschild? Did you ever hear about that one?
Familiar with the Rothschild, but
remember the Battle of Waterloo?
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember. I'm thinking that was 18. Let me see. I'm going to put it in the computer here. I'll just put in Waterloo and see what comes up. So this was Nathan Rothschild's greatest moment, probably. Waterloo Community Schools. We'll do this Waterloo Battle of. We'll put that in. Okay, so this is like back in the 1820s, somewhere around there.
1815.
18, was that it?
Yeah.
Do you know who he was fighting?
Napoleon.
Yeah, and do you know who the English general was? You remember the English general? Was it Wellington or was
Wellington, the Duke of Wellington?
Yeah, I was thinking it was Wellington. So here's what happened. I mean, I have to tell you, talking about a man seizing opportunity, Nathan Rothschild was at the Battle of Wellington, at the Battle of Waterloo in 1815. Thank you so much for your factual support here. I just looked it up on Wikipedia, too, which any of you could do right now. Just put in Battle of Waterloo facts. They won't all be there, but Nathan is there. He sees that Napoleon was supposed to win the battle against Wellington, okay? So what happened was, unbeknownst to any of the English, the Russians came in and helped and whooped good old Napoleon. So Nathan saw a really grand opportunity here, and what he did was, in those days, you had ships and horses and running. That's about the way you could get anywhere. He ran to a horse, hopped on the horse, rode to his ship, went to England, and pretended, like everybody had expected, that Napoleon had won the battle. What do you think that did to the English stock market?
Not a good thing.
Right, especially when he sold all of his stock, and he caused the English stock market to crash.
Okay.
Then what he did as soon as it hit the bottom was he ran around and bought it all up. And then by the time the English found out that Wellington had won, Nathan owned England. He liked that. So he went and he did the same thing in France. And that is the basis of the Rothschild fortune.
Manipulating the market?
Uh-huh. Do you know what bumping is, Armin?
Bumping? Is that a dance?
Aren't you cute? That was the bump, Armin.
Yeah, I knew that.
Okay, bumping is what you do in the stock market. What you do is you go in and buy a lot of a stock and you force the price up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, you have it. You buy it lower and then you force the price up. and then you sell out when it's at the peak, and then it drops. It's
right.
called bumping. Basically, we've been bumped.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the housing market was a bump. I mean, I don't know if you remember. Do you remember, like, a couple of years ago when people were, like, in lotteries to buy houses?
Yeah.
I mean, wasn't that amazing?
The housing market was like a bump, but the one way that the average person could have at least seen, but and even today we don't quite, is the affordability factors tell on things. I think at some point the average family of four in L.A. County could not buy the average home. As a matter of fact, only about 10-15% of the average family of four could buy the average price home when the prices were at their peak. Well, that
should
tell
God,
you.
Oh, God, yeah.
Inflated. I mean, if only 10-15% of the people can afford the average home, that's not a good thing. That's
what
inflated.
Should the figures be, Armin, in your
well,
opinion?
I'm not sure that it's that the average family should provide, but I mean, I think that when you start getting, when, you know, less than a third of the people can afford, I think that that starts to put strain on the system and strain on
more
prices.
More like less than a fifth or a quarter, you know what you're saying?
In theory, you would think it would be 50-50, would be a very efficient system, but so it's, you know, people couldn't afford. And that was public information.
Oh, that's very interesting. Anything else you've noticed during all of this? I mean, you know, and you and I were talking earlier about it's not like we can't do it, but we have to fight like 10 times as hard. And it's all a conversation anyway, especially when you realize all that money is there. Well, all the credits are there. All the debits are there.
Right.
Everybody with a Social Security number can go right in and start accessing those credits.
You may need to put on some, hire some more, teach more people how to do it, because certainly having... The observation I would make is the banks are not lending at a time when we need it the most, so the more people can have access to liquidity and capital,
well,
the better.
That's part of driving us down, okay? The what do you want to call it? The liquidity has been taken away, which is further part of the driving down of business. I mean, Circuit City went out of business, you know? You knew that one, right?
Well, yeah, they went out of business, and the most economists and Wall Street bankers would tell you the Fed is pumping a lot of liquidity in the system, which is very true. The challenge is if the liquidity was spread out over millions of Americans who owned homes, and now it's very narrowly spread out to a few banks.
Right.
That's not good for the economy. And you mentioned earlier, you know, just helping, if the TARP money had helped the average consumer. In a lot of ways, that can, you know, it's, if you help a consumer to buy a car, that's a one-shot deal. If you help them to pay their mortgage, it's a lifetime. That's a huge implication on their financial well-being. And I think strategies that banks and the government and policymakers embark upon should really focus on how to help more people and how to you know build their wealth or improve their fortunes as opposed to and you know, putting pressure on the banks is a part of it, but you know, action is much louder than words, and the banking system needs to, you know, we can criticize it, but the banks are the most effective way to put out money.
You know, that was an interesting thing that you said earlier. I mean, I gave you a point for that. Only one, though.
Yeah,
but I did give you a point for that. You are trained in money management, and you are trained in balancing books. And I'm not talking you personally because I think you're an exception, but I'm talking about the royal you. Mm-hmm. If the royal you decided to actually help the American people access their funds, when you talk to Tim Turner, he's opening this bank for one reason. He's opening, well, two reasons. He's opening it so that we can cash our bonded promissory notes, okay? But he's also opening it so that people can come to a bank and actually find out how to access their funds and pay a reasonable service fee for that. I mean, we could take these people that are being painted as scoundrels, and some of them definitely are. One of the things I didn't tell you was is that I had a lot of Delta Airline points, and I had to use them up. So one of the things I did was I got a subscription to the Wall Street Journal because I just wanted to find out what the buggers were doing. They declared themselves bonuses minutes after they got the money. One of the Wall Street Journal headlines was, "We're back in business again."
Yeah.
Okay? I was just amazed that this could be, like, so blatantly stated after all this money was handed out.
It doesn't seem a little bit intriguing, at least, when they say that we need to pay bonuses to retain the employees that screwed everything up.
Yeah! Did you love that?
to unwind these trades that they should have never happened. It is.
Do you sit there? I mean, I could imagine you. I don't think you smoke a pipe, but I can kind of see you sitting there smoking a pipe, reading the paper, chuckling at the outrageousness of it all.
It is a little bit absurd at times. And then to kind of tell people that, you know, yeah, we're the only ones in the world that can do this. Yeah, I'm sure you are.
No, actually, unfortunately, Armin, what I've discovered in the last 8 months is that this is pretty much, you know, the International Monetary Fund, they say that the center of the world economy is actually New York City and the United Nations. I mean, there's just so many things that I've been hearing that I don't know where to put them all in their proper places. But what I understand is this is no longer a U.S. situation, you know?
This
is actually global, what's going on here.
Very much worldwide, and while parts of the international market are starting to show some problems, this was the first time that the U.S. Usually the U.S. catches a cold, the world gets a fever. The U.S. got a fever, and the rest of the world, especially the developing countries, did not. They got a cold, but they had a lot of excess dollars. The economy, and there are worldwide implications. And I think people, I mean, if you start to dig deeper, issues as complex as immigration, our immigration changed when our economy softened.
Say more about that.
Meaning that when the job market was robust and when we were overinflating, making it easy for anybody to afford a home, it made it easy for people to come from, you know, Mexico and Latin American countries to go and not only live here, but get jobs. When the economy softened, more people are heading back home. But there's another aspect to that. If the Latin American countries were invested in from a development, I'm not saying that's not done, but increasingly invested in, the jobs would get created in their own countries. And historically, the world, the European, the U.S. powers have not been very good at helping developing, what we used to be called developing countries, develop. It was more about what resources can we get, can we extract, and throughout Africa, Latin America. And I think when you start, there's a high price to be paid for those type of things, both in terms of humanity.
I'm sorry, what do we pay a high price for?
When you don't develop a country.
We also pay a high price sometimes when you do, because all that money we gave to Africa, we did that I was at the State of the World Forum in 2001 where all the African leaders were there. Almost every one of them was in bankruptcy, okay? And it turned out that they were saying that, and it was concluded by a lot of other people, that bankers, not necessarily the kind of bankers we're talking about, but foreign investment bankers and such, had lent the African government a lot of money, different governments, knowing full well they couldn't manage it, so that they can then go in and take over their countries when they defaulted on the loans.
Yeah, and that's
wrong.
Has been the history of a lot of American and European. No, you're many countries were not, I mean, were destabilized. And I think it was the CFO of one of the big companies, that owned Chiquita Banana years ago.
And by the way, that's Chief Financial Officer, for those of you who don't know the term.
And he made the comment, it's just, it'd been something like, and I'm not going to get the number right, but it was in the teens. He said there's been something like 18 undeclared wars in Latin America, and the bulk of them were to protect their interests. I mean,
18, wow.
And it's not, I mean, I'm not trying to, I'm, as a person who's a banker, an economist, a businessman, I'm saying these things more in objective terms, not to throw spears. The history of the world has been violent. My daughter asked, when do we grow up as a people and stop hurting each other? I don't know.
How old is your daughter?
Turned 12 a couple weeks ago.
Well, that's one of the clearest minds I've heard in a while. Thank you, dear.
Yeah, geez. And I said, well, maybe it's your generation, because my generation and those before us have not proven to be civilized very much. And So, but it, as opposed to going in and conquering and concluding that a country can't take care of itself, no, we should go in. It's actually in the best interest of both our country and theirs that there be a normal free trade, and that we try to invest cross-board, try to understand each other culturally and socially. Most people are really...
Oh, my God, Armin, we've only got, like, a few seconds left. this has been too much fun, I tell you. You got one parting sentence here, okay?
My parting sentence is that the policymakers, please keep focusing on these banks. They're taking longer to do loan modifications than they are to foreclose. And get smart people to help you regulate these folks.
This program has been brought to you by the Golden Hearts Foundation in association with Kirkgaard Media, our radio partners, KoningCompany.com, Mona V, Max GXL, Dr. James Murphy, and thank you so much, James Murphy, in memoriam. And thank you to the team at Voice America. We love you. Jeff Spinard, you're hot. Nathan Jett, I'm so glad you're coming back. And to Ben Mike for this theme music that you're listening to. It's Almost Ordinary People. Next week, invite a friend to listen. Write us at val@wakingupinamerica.com. And remember, accept for value. It's going to be absolutely outrageous. And this is our last show of the year, and our first show of the year is Tim Turner, and we're going to be talking about the New Republic. We're going to be talking about maritime banks, and we're going to be talking about accepted for value. So spread the word. We love you. Check on the archives. If you missed the show, you can go to the archives. It'll be on by 3 o'clock this afternoon, okay? Blessing. And the time you spoke them, we're almost ordinary people
with extraordinary plans. Thank you for joining us today for Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. Waking Up in America can be heard live every Wednesday, 12 p.m. Pacific Time on voiceamerica.com, and Valerie welcomes all emails at heavenincorporated.com.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.